This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/starttalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/starttalk today.
Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now. Welcome to Star Talk Radio. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson. I'm an astrophysicist and director of New York City's Hayden Planetarium. In this Star Talk, we're featuring my interview with the award-winning actor Lawrence Fishburne. You've probably seen him in a bunch of movies, and he was shooting a new sci-fi indie film in Albuquerque, New Mexico, when I ran into him when I was filming Cosmos on a soundstage in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Cosmos was filmed all around the world, as well as in two major sound studios, one in Los Angeles, one in Santa Fe. And in Santa Fe is where we filmed all the scenes on the Spaceship of the Imagination. If you haven't seen Cosmos, check it out. It's actually online if you don't catch it in real time on television. Online, it's www.cosmosontv.com. In this first clip with Lawrence Fishburne, I run down the list of some of his most popular movies. We also discuss his interest in science and the influences that led him to a career in film and television. Lawrence, you have the most diverse acting career of anyone I have seen.
I mean, thank you.
From Pee Wee Herman to Apocalypse Now.
Pee Wee's Playhouse, Apocalypse Now, Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Damn.
School Days.
School Days, of course. And one of my favorites, which was not a box office success, but so well made and so beautifully done, and you were the character of the movie, was Searching for Bobby Fischer.
Yes, Bobby Fischer was wonderful.
Man, what a proud product that is.
That's a really great movie.
My son, in fact, got into chess by seeing that, and now he's moving up. He's 12.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm not just blowing smoke. There's a lot here. My regret is that I missed you on Broadway in...
Oh, in Thurgood.
In Thurgood.
Well, we'll get you a copy. We'll send you one.
Oh, good. Okay.
We actually shot it in D.C. where he did most of his great work.
But he was at Howard, right?
Yeah,
Howard.
Howard.
Yeah, and then, of course, Supreme Court.
And all of that. It was like doing the home team thing. It was great.
And I listed all your sci-fi movies here.
Right.
So we've got Event Horizon, certainly, the Matrix trilogy, and Contagion, Man of Steel. And when you're in progress, The Signal.
Maybe we'll talk about it
if you can a little later.
My very first one, which is one that not a lot of people know about, which is called Cherry 2000.
Cherry 2000.
Cherry 2000.
I have to look that one up.
If you blink, you'll miss me.
Oh, so you were a background actor in that one, is that?
Well, not exactly background, but not much more than a glorified extra.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, mother, junior high school math and science teacher.
Yes.
Any my mother is effect a math... on you at all?
Yes. I would have to say, definitely, I am a natural reader. My father is also a natural reader. I did fairly well in math, and I guess I did okay in science. I think both of those two subjects just helped round me out in terms of making me a curious person. So I'm naturally curious about the world.
Many people who take math and science who don't become mathematicians or scientists think that it's, well, I'll never use this again. But you just hit the nail on the head, that it changes your outlook.
Yeah, I mean, it made me curious about the world, and it gave me a way into the world, a way of investigating the world and exploring the world that wasn't just about what things looked like or how people talked. I mean, I had that kind of curiosity naturally, but for example, I would say the big piece that allowed me to think about another part of the world and another culture, for example, is like the Hindu-Arabic system. The way they introduce that to you in school is like, what? You're like, yeah. We didn't invent numbers. Somebody else invented the number system that we used.
That's why they call it Arabic numbers. Yeah.
And so when you think about that, then it gives you a window into that part of the world. It
allows you to start thinking outside of the box.
Outside of the box and outside of your world and where you come from and all that stuff. So that kind of stuff was great. And then, of course, with the science thing, growing up in New York and having access
In Brooklyn,
having access to the Brooklyn Planetarium, having access to the one in Manhattan, and having
the
Hayden Planetarium, exactly. Mm-hmm.
That's my place now, just
is
so you
it?
Know.
Oh.
I got the keys.
Oh, you got the keys?
Just back up.
Oh, uh-oh.
You got to know somebody.
Oh, wow. Cool. I'm right there on 86, too, so I'm... Neil! Where you at?
You can knock on the door.
Trying to get my stargaze on, Papa. You know what I mean? When the moon is in the seventh house. No.
So you have a secret knock, and I'll know it's you in the back door.
Me.
I'll let you in the back door of the universe.
Exactly. But we had access to Hayden. We had access to the one in Brooklyn. And I think all of my friends, we were all curious about the world. And, you know, we had Cosmos. We grew up with Cosmos. Cosmos was on TV.
It was Carl Sagan. Yeah.
With Sagan, I mean.
So it was kind of a baptism.
We had that. We had Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The original. We had Space 1999, which was all about exploring, you know, it was all about what's out there.
But how early did you think or know you were going to be an actor?
I became an actor at the age of 10. Became a professional actor at the age of 10.
Did you have any sense that your knowledge of science would matter or play into
Yes, I did, because the first thing I wanted to be was I wanted to be a doctor.
Oh, okay, put a check in that box because you got that CSI, you're a doctor.
See, so as a doctor, you know, you got to have some science. You can't be doctoring on people and not have some science. It just don't work. I wanted to be a basketball player.
Okay.
I wanted to be Walt Clyde Frazier, specifically.
A friend of mine in high school was the ball boy for the Knicks. And while Clyde was playing, and I had the same size feet as Walt Frazier. He had his Puma contract.
Yeah.
Every game, he'd throw his shoes away. And my boy would go,
oh, I hate you right now. Oh, I'm still wearing Puma. I'm still trying to find Clyde's Pumas. You got some old ones in the house somewhere near?
Me and Clyde had the same feet.
I
had free Pumas for like a year and a half.
That is crazy.
Yeah. So this is the era. This is the era.
So that was the era. So I wanted to be a doctor. Then I wanted to be a basketball player. Then I became an actor at 10. And I realized immediately that as an actor, I could be anything. Anything. So science would fall under the heading of anything. Most things, really, when you think about it. So I was never one of these people who was like, oh, I'm never going to use that. It was when I get an opportunity to use that, then I'll explore it some more and I'll learn something, maybe.
So when you were a kid in school, were you like the class clown, the geek?
Definitely class clown.
Not anyone a teacher would have said he'll go far?
No, probably not.
But you said you did well in math?
I did well in all subjects, yeah.
Okay, so you're a good student then.
I was a good student.
All
yes.
right. Generally, that's when people say you'll do well, but...
I was a little too social sometimes.
Funny thing, in life, that's great, but in school, they don't like it.
No, and I challenged one of my teachers, who was the one who said I would go far. I challenged him a bit, but, you know, he got over it. It was all right.
You've been listening to Star Talk Radio. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson. When we come back, I'll talk with Lawrence Fishburne about one of my all-time favorite movies... The Matrix.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room.
You can see it when you look out your window, or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work.
When you go to church. When you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
Welcome back to Star Talk Radio. In this show, we're featuring my interview with the actor Lawrence Fishburne. In this next clip, we talk about his role as Morpheus. And it's from one of my favorite movies of all time, The Matrix. We also touch upon his portrayal as Perry White in the Superman movie Man of Steel. And although Lawrence Fishburne has been in a lot of science fiction films, as we'll hear, there's one particular role he wishes he could have played. So we got to do some time on Matrix here.
Sure.
It's one of my top three favorite films in my life is Matrix 1, of course.
Right, yeah.
I'm sorry. Matrix 1.
I'm with you.
I just thought it was stunning and jaw-dropping. And everything about it. At the time, did you have any concept that this was going to become what it was?
What I knew was that it was simply the most original material that I had ever encountered. And that I was going to play that part.
Okay. That shows the sign of somebody who's driven by art.
Yes.
Others aren't.
Well, I'm lucky and blessed that way.
Yeah, and just how it was filmed and the themes.
Yeah.
And there's one science flaw.
Tell me.
They had to leave it in. So I'm not going to get on their case.
Okay.
But in your speech about how they needed to get their energy.
Okay? The copper top thing?
The copper top thing. And it's all to turn humans into batteries.
Right.
So it turns out that whatever energy it takes to get the energy out of the person.
Right.
You could just use that energy.
Oh, you could just use that.
Every time you use energy to get energy from something else, you lose energy.
Okay.
So you're feeding this entity,
organism right.
food, which is energy.
Right.
To then use the human as energy, you're not getting as much energy as you put in ever.
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 Oh.
Now, the way out of that was using this plus some solar and nuclear power, we run the city.
These are the batteries.
Right. These are the multiple kinds of batteries, and we got humans in there, too.
Right.
Fact is, they didn't need the humans at all.
But it's really cool, though.
I have to admit, it's a case where coolness overrides everything.
Coolness overrides it. And sometimes in science fiction, that's the criteria. Sometimes it's style over substance.
And style works in science fiction.
It does.
Because you could take a style where you're not passing judgment. Well, that didn't fit that era.
Sense.
That's not what they would have done in 19 whatever. You know,
right.
Look, it's 2350.
Right.
It's one thing for a movie to be successful, but it's also another thing to build a whole fan base around it. Clearly, The Matrix has this. Because I imitated you.
Yeah.
Ready? Right now, watch. Ready?
Yeah.
I'm Morpheus. I do that all the time. Oh, I need my sunglasses for that.
Yeah, you got to get your sunglasses.
I'm Morpheus.
You got to get your shades. As you no doubt have guessed, I am Morpheus. That's fun. It's fun. What was great about him for me is he turns out to actually be, just, you know, one of my favorite characters and everyone's favorite characters in science fiction is Darth Vader. Vader is a great character. Morpheus is kind of like Vader and Obi-Wan rolled up into one guy.
Mm. So, the power and the philosophy.
Yeah, he's light mentor and dark mentor.
Yeah.
So that's a fully realized human being in a way that we don't get to see that often.
Yeah, I know it was working for me because you were Morpheus in that role, and I'm not thinking Lawrence Fishburne.
Right.
I'm just thinking Morpheus.
Yeah,
and when I see you on Searching for Bobby Fischer, you're the homeless guy in the park. So I guess I'm complimenting you.
Thank you.
The character, it lives in that time and place with you. So what's your favorite special effect in The Matrix?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
My favorite one
is
when the whole team goes to see the Oracle and there's that shot in that room on the
phone. I know every frame, so you don't have to try to remind
me. Okay, so the shot in the room on the phone and the camera goes around the phone and there's no one
there. Everyone is coming in.
And then suddenly, when the camera makes the revolution, everybody's there.
Yeah.
That's my favorite special effect.
Really?
Yeah, because it's not a special effect. It's, you know.
It's simple, actually.
It's very simple. The camera's in the room. It's on a track or a Steadicam. I can't remember which.
The phone rings.
We were in the room, and the camera made one revolution, and before it made the other revolution, we all rushed and got into position.
Okay, so you're easy to please.
So
forget the bullet time.
Yeah, yeah. It's an old-time movie trick. It's like the camera never lies, but we can lie to it. That's my favorite special effect.
It's an interesting scene. It has a good sort of musical beat to it.
It's got great music,
yeah.
You know, and it's got the great movement of the camera, and then suddenly you've got this beautiful tableau of this whole team of people just suddenly around the phone, pick up the phone and go, we're in.
Great. In The Matrix, you're really an action hero on some level.
Yes, exactly.
And that's a genre unto itself.
But, you know, I mean, that's a really a young man's game. You know what I mean? I'm not looking to be an action hero at 60. I don't mind doing some action.
Well, you convinced me you knew a little bit of kung fu. But...
I do. I know a little bit of kung fu. Movie kung fu. My kung fu. Pretty good.
So, Perry White?
Yes. Editor of the Daily Planet.
I have street cred with Superman. I don't know if you know this. You,
how so?
I was in a Superman comic a few months ago. Action Comics 41. Superman wanted to find his home planet, find Krypton, because the light signal of Krypton being destroyed
right.
would be coming to us about now. Okay.
Oh, wow. Oh,
and
wow.
he came to the planetarium.
Oh, wow.
So
That's
I'm
so cool.
director of the planetarium.
Oh, my God.
And I'll send you. I'll
that
send
is
you
so cool.
The comic.
Okay.
And so I'm there with Superman.
I may have the comic, Neil.
I'm told there were two. There's Superman comics and Action Comics.
I may have to come.
Here's the fun part. So I go. We're talking through the plot about
right.
how I'm going to deal with him and how
right.
what questions he might ask. And I said, oh, by the way, if it makes no difference to you, could you take a few pounds off of me? And the guy said, Dr. Tyson, this is the world of the comics. Everyone looks good.
Everyone looks good.
You got to love Superman.
You can't not love Superman, and you can't not love the bat. You just can't.
You know, my favorite comment about Superman is that he actually has no costume. There's nothing covering his face
no.
when he's Superman.
No.
His costume is to
his
blend
Kent.
In with it
yes.
in real life.
Yes. Yeah, that's his costume.
His costume is his glasses and his suit.
And his,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, his mild-mannered reporter.
That's right.
Yeah.
He is himself.
As
when
Superman.
He's the superhero.
Yeah, that's true.
Is there any role in a sci-fi movie you ever wanted?
Yes, Dr. Manhattan in The Watchmen.
What a striking character that
Dr.
is.
Dr. Manhattan. I would have loved to have done Dr. Manhattan. However, I just worked with Billy, who played Dr. Manhattan, and he was magnificent. And he was telling me how they did it. It's really amazing how they did it.
Uh-huh. But, you know, it's quantum non-location. I mean, once you turn someone into particles, a particle... Mm-hmm. has different laws that apply to it
right.
compared with macroscopic entities.
Right.
So a particle can be in more than one place at a
one
time.
Exactly.
So he is decomposed into particles. He can reappear like on Mars.
Wherever.
You know my favorite scene of that movie where he brings the woman with
well, he
her.
Brings her to,
and
well,
she's
to Mars. And she's, he goes, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot.
And he's all,
I love that.
That was just so it. Cool.
One of my favorite lines from the comic book is, yes, Superman is real and he is an American.
No, it wasn't Superman.
Is it?
It was God exists,
oh,
and he's American.
Oh, and he's American.
No, maybe the comic might have said Superman in the movie.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I love that.
So I personally think that's best of genre.
Watchmen?
Watchmen.
Absolutely.
Best of genre among...
Yeah, yeah. Nobody delivers a comic book movie better than Zack.
Oh, is that right?
I mean, there's only two frames in the comic book that are missing. Everything else is frame for frame the book.
Really?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, so he's true to,
he's,
true to the fan
base. I couldn't believe it. I was watching. I was like, how did he get away with
yeah.
this? It's really something.
So do science fiction movies live in a different place in your heart and mind compared with other dramatic roles? They take a different thing out of you as an actor,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I love science fiction movies. I love science fiction to begin with because I'm convinced that we're not by ourselves here. There's got to be more than just us. The cool thing about science fiction is all the stuff that was imagined, say, 50, 60 years ago, some of that stuff is actually real now.
As portrayed in science fiction.
As portrayed
yeah.
in science fiction. I mean, like, you know, these devices we're walking around with. I mean, that's real now.
In fact, we've already been past the flip phone.
Yes.
Now, that's old.
That's old. They're talking about, yeah, hi, baby. I like that kind of stuff because it allows the imagination to be really expansive and open up and go places. And that's great.
Well, it's an interesting way to think about it because in a dramatic role, you're contained by the characters as they are as humans on Earth in
yeah.
a time and in place.
And the realities of what our situation is. If people can't fly, people can't fly. You know, if you're making period pieces that happened before the invention of flight.
That's it.
Unless it's a science fiction fantasy thing and some dude shows up and he can fly.
Right. That's a different movie.
That's a different movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so happy that I got to do some science fiction because for the longest time it looked like we weren't going to participate in the future.
Well, Lieutenant Uhura was like
Lieutenant
first in
Uhura,
on that
she
one.
Was like the only
the
one.
First
you know?
One in.
Yeah, she was it.
I had her on Star Talk.
Cool.
Oh, man. It was
that's
great.
Good.
She's still hot. If you haven't heard my two-part interview with Nichelle Nichols, who played Lieutenant Uhura in the original Star Trek TV series, as well as in the movies, then check it out on iTunes or through our web portal, startalkradio.net. That interview is from Season 2, Episodes 24 and 25. You'll have to scroll down a bit to find them, but I guarantee they're well worth the effort. She's a gracious, spirited lady who led an extraordinary life.
When StarTalk returns, I'll have more of my interview with the also extraordinary actor, Lawrence Fishburne.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Hey, remember when we did that show about the science of the golf swing? Well, let's take that to the next level. And that's because PXG has developed the Black Ops driver so golfers don't have to sacrifice distance for forgiveness. And the science proves it. PXG Black Ops driver is a breakthrough in driver technology. It's a complete and total victory in golf club engineering, unlike anything you've ever seen before. Black Ops drivers are adjustable to deliver a combined MOI of 10,000 plus for unreal forgiveness. Now that's ridiculously high. The higher the MOI, the more forgiving the club will play. So you don't have to square the ball perfectly for it to go straight and get distance. Add PXG's new advanced material face technology and you get incredible ball speed that pushes the distance to the absolute limits. More forgiveness, more distance, no sacrifices. PXG Black Ops driver. Hit your tee shot straighter and farther. The proof is in the science. Learn more and get free shipping on all equipment. Go to pxg.com/startalk and use code startalk at checkout. That's pxg.com/startalk. Use code startalk for free shipping on all equipment. pxg.com/startalk, code startalk.
How to win, he taught you how not to lose. That's nothing to be proud of. You're playing not to lose, Josh. You got to risk losing. You got to risk everything. You got to go to the edge of defeat. That's where you want to be, boy. On the edge of defeat.
But what? Play.
Welcome back to Star Talk Radio. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson. In this show, we're featuring my interview with Lawrence Fishburne. In this segment, we discuss his role as a chess hustler in the film Searching for Bobby Fischer. That 1993 movie is based on the life of a young chess prodigy in New York City. The title of the movie is said to be a metaphor about the character's quest to win the game at any price, just like his idol, Bobby Fischer, who some consider to be the greatest chess player of all time. In the movie, the young boy first picks up the game from speed chess players that hang out in Washington Square Park. As portrayed by Lawrence Fishburne, their teaching style greatly differs from that of the chess coach played by Ben Kingsley. You know, scientists have speculated that computers should be able to solve the game of chess. In other words, to come up with perfect strategies to always win. But it hasn't happened yet.
There are 10 to the 120th possible game variations, with 10 to the 43rd possible board position for each move. Some think limitations in computing, including quantum and thermodynamic barriers, might prevent computers from ever being able to examine the entire tree of possible move consequences in the game. Let's listen to what Lawrence Fishburne has to say about chess in the movie Searching for Bobby Fischer. You were the chess bum.
I was the speed chess player.
The speed chess guy, yeah. Homeless guy in the park. And my son was telling me, look, he's pushing the pieces the right way.
Yeah.
You had a coach, I guess.
We had a consultant. There's a character in the film called, I want to say Gandolfini, but his name is not Gandolfini. The character that Ben Kingsley played is based on a real man.
Oh, Pandolfini.
Yes.
Gandalf was in.
Right, yeah. Gandalf is someone else. Lord of the Circles or something. Anyway, to me, the thing about that movie that's great is that movie stands the test of time. You can go back and look at that movie now.
Yes.
And that movie resonates.
Right.
That movie plays beautifully.
For parenting, for ambition.
Yeah. It's got real life stuff in it, and it's a classic in that sense. It reminds me of the New York that I grew up in. New York was like that at the time. When I grew up there, and certainly up until at least the late 90s, it was.
So did you play chess before this?
I learned to play the game when I was 9.
Okay.
And I love the game. I wish I played seriously, but I don't. I can move the pieces. I know where they go. I can teach anybody the fundamental rules of chess and get them on their way to playing a game. Not playing a good game, but just playing the game, basically. So doing that movie was great because for a little while, people thought I played seriously, and that always is kind of fun. But I taught a couple of young people during that period of time, you know, people who otherwise might not have gravitated to the game.
Is there any question about the universe you've been harboring that you might want to ask
me? My question about the universe is, it's kind of God-related. It's like, has there ever been a moment where the scientific community and the religious community came together to discuss and debate the existence of God and his place or her place in the universe?
There are panels on this all the time.
Yeah.
But they never converge.
Mm.
Well, when they do, they tend to converge on the, well, we don't know what was around before the beginning of the universe, could have been God kind of convergence.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening there is they're assigning the scientific ignorance to the religious knowledge.
Uh-huh.
But what happens when the scientific ignorance goes away because you made a discovery?
Right.
And the history of exploration shows that there are plenty of things that religion pretty much had control over, like epilepsy.
Right.
What was that? That you were possessed.
Yes.
The devil was in you.
Right. Okay, wait a minute.
There was no other accounting
for it. Right.
You're frothing at the mouth. It happens at an instant.
Right.
You know you did something bad. So,
right.
Devil took ownership of your body.
Right.
And now we study the brain. It's epilepsy. You can medicine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So things like that start shedding from.
Yes.
And it just keeps going.
Yeah, because I'm of the mind that so much has been shed. So much has been understood. So much has been scientifically understood and looked at that there must be some space for the religious community to go, okay, well, great. So what is the nature of God?
That space can't occupy places where they were previously making claims about the world.
Right.
Universe made in 6 days and the Earth is in the middle, flat. Yeah, you got to kind of shed that.
You got
to
shed all
that. Time
to
let that go.
Yeah.
Right.
Because we've moved past the steam engine. And,
right,
you know,
right. Exactly.
We've been off world, man. You know,
off world?
We've been off world.
I'd like that.
Right?
I'm not going to say we've been to the moon before. I would say we've been off world.
We've been off world. So we know we are not confined to this space.
You know, it matters more that we were off world than that we went to the moon.
Yeah,
it does. You know why? Because when we went to the moon, we looked back and discovered Earth for the first time.
For the first time.
We saw Earth.
We saw
Earth as nature intended it to be seen, not with color-coded countries.
Oh, wow.
But as ocean.
Right.
And land.
And land. And atmosphere.
And atmosphere. Previous drawings of the Earth never showed clouds. Atmosphere wasn't even part of Earth.
Right.
It was only after those pictures came out did people say, wait a minute, I better think about the environment. You know when the Environmental Protection Agency was founded? 1970.
72.
No, 70.
Damn.
70. We're still at war. Cold War, hot war, civil rights, people getting shot. But we take the time out to say, let's protect the environment. That happened because we saw Earth for the first time.
For the first time. As it was meant to be seen.
As it was meant to
be. As God has seen.
As God. When we return, we'll have more of my interview with Lawrence Fishburne.
Welcome back to Star Talk Radio. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson, and we're continuing now with my Lawrence Fishburne interview. In this part of the show, we talk about his role as Dr. Ray Langston in the TV series CSI. Of course, CSI stands for Crime Scene Investigations, and the show features crimes that police try to solve by using the tools of forensic science. The show's been a big hit for CBS, running for 14 seasons and spanning a whole franchise with spin-offs, CSI New York, CSI Miami, comic books, video games, novels, and even a traveling museum exhibit called CSI The Experience. But before we get to that, Lawrence and I start off with perhaps some of his lesser-known work. How much voice work do you do?
I do a lot of voice work.
Yeah.
I voiced the Silver Surfer for the Fantastic Four movie.
Uh-huh.
And I also did a voice for Ninja Turtles, the last...
I'm sorry, I missed that one.
Yeah.
That one got by me.
Well,
I'm sorry.
That's cool.
Which Ninja Turtle were you?
Oh, no, I was the narrator. I narrated the opening.
Oh, okay.
I kind of set it all up.
Can you name your Ninja Turtles?
Leonardo, Donatello, and I forget the other two.
Do you realize that the Italian segments of the space station... are named after...
No, really?
Those in the know
are named
say it's the Ninja Turtles, but if you don't know the Ninja Turtles... Renaissance artists!
Renaissance masters? Wow, that's great. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And of your roles in science-themed shows, does anyone rise above the rest?
I think probably the most purely scientific was the role that I played on CSI with Dr. Langston.
Uh-huh.
Being a pathologist and having to really use scientific dialogue, be in a lab...
I got to say, those bodies look really dead.
Those bodies are really good. They did a really good job.
So I'm assuming they're not really dead bodies.
They're not really dead bodies. But also, the science was maybe 85% correct on the show. Sometimes they would do it in a fake kind of way because it was something that, you know...
They got to still tell the story that they want to tell.
Not just because they had to tell the story, but like they didn't want people, for example, there was something called the CSI effect that happened after CSI first aired, where criminals were actually watching the show to see how to beat
investigators.
Wow. So after,
how to cover their track.
Yeah. So after about two seasons, they started altering the science just a little bit so that it wasn't exact.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder what that says about other shows like Breaking Bad. Teach you how to
teach you how to make meth. Man, what a great show there.
Are you tapping any of your science literacy when you're thinking about these roles and doing these roles, or is it mostly your acting talent?
It's mostly my acting skills that I've developed over the years. Now, like I say, CSI, which for me was the closest that I've gotten to being a scientific person, I had the benefit of technical advisor who was always there, who would explain if there was ever a question about how something gets done, why something gets done. Is this correct? We had several coroners that would come in, and they offered us the
opportunity. How many people get to say that? We always had a coroner.
Right? And we had the opportunity to go and see the coroners actually at work. I opted not to do that. I felt it would be just a little insensitive to family members of the deceased.
But the producers are thinking about... Trying to get the most out of you for this.
Yeah, I mean, it was the closest that I've come to. But mostly it was the acting skill. But there were people that were there that you could rely on and you could talk to about the science of it. So
that gave you a confidence to just run in and do the role.
Oh, absolutely. Because I knew that they really worked hard at making it as close to truth.
Real instead of fake real.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that set that show apart from everything else that was on television.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's actually had an influence on how many people are choosing to major in chemistry and in biology, especially women, because these are fully developed characters, and it's not just the stereotyped wire-haired scientist.
Right.
They got problems. They got loves.
Right.
They got joys. Scientists as real people.
As sexy real people.
Exactly.
Nice.
We actually had on Star Talk the science advisor to the movie Contagion.
The guy that worked at the CDC?
Yeah, an advisor to the CDC. He's a specialist in communicable diseases.
I wonder if it was Elliot, because Elliot was with us every day.
Oh,
he was wonderful, man. Every day he'd be like, let me show you this. Let me show you what we're tracking now.
That science advisor to the movie Contagion was Dr. Ian Lipkin, and he was on our first show about the zombie apocalypse. That's season 4, episode 13, in case you want to check it out, at startalkradio.net. When we return, we'll have more of my interview with Lawrence Fishburne.
As of last night, there are 5 deaths and 32 cases.
There's a cluster in an elementary school.
Okay, that's the kind of thing you're going to have to be prepared for. It's going to be all over the news big time. What's your single overriding communications objective?
We're isolating the sick and quarantining those who we believe were exposed.
Okay, good. As of this moment, you and I are attached at the cell phone. If you need resources, call me. If you get into a political dogfight, call me. If you find yourself wide awake, staring at the walls at 3 a.m. wondering why you took the job, call me.
There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are in France. Which means Tubi is more popular than cigarettes for breakfast. It's more popular than considering iced coffee a total abomination. More popular than loving political revolutions. More popular than mère and mère somehow being different words. Tubi, it's more popular than being French. See you in there.
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Star Talk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah. Of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well.
Ooh, yeah. That happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
You never told me that. That's just it, DJ. I never told anybody. But this ship knew about it. It knows my fears. It knows my secrets. Gets inside your head and it shows you.
Welcome back to Star Talk Radio. You can find us on Facebook at Star Talk Radio. And we also tweet, of course, at Star Talk Radio. If interested, I also tweet at Neil Tyson. We're wrapping up my interview now with Lawrence Fishburne. He's a talented actor with such a broad range, not only appearing in the sci-fi films featured in this show, but also, for instance, in Event Horizon and Predators. He played roles in many different kinds of movies, including Apocalypse Now, Boys in the Hood. He even played the title character in Shakespeare's Othello. In this final clip, we start off talking about the movie he was filming, The Day in the Desert in New Mexico. And then we get into a deeper discussion about his plans for the future.
Yeah, I got this thing, The Signal, that I'm doing with this young director called Will Eubanks here in New Mexico, which is a very interesting little piece about a young man who's confined to a wheelchair. He and his hacker buddies get contacted by a signal somewhere out here in the desert. They're in MIT. Somebody in the desert is really,
talking to him,
really messing with him, hacking him. And so they get in the car and they come to find the signal.
I would think that would be a bad idea.
But. Yeah, it is. And then they disappear. And when they reappear, well, they're somewhere in the desert with strange scientific folk.
Because we are strange folk, yeah. Indeed.
And I play this strange scientific man who's trying to help him piece together what has happened to him.
So are you alien or Earth?
I am definitely Earth, and I am definitely here. It's just a little...
It's having fun with the space-time continuum.
It's, yeah, it's some other shit altogether, let me just say. Because I wouldn't have done it if it wasn't some other shit altogether. It's really... When I read it, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. Yeah, I got to do this one. So I hope you dig it.
And so where are you going to be in 5, 10 years? When you
Oh, goodness. I'll still be acting. I'll be producing a lot more.
Yeah, I saw that. Producing, writing,
I'll be
directing?
I'll be directing a lot more. Uh-huh. I'll probably have 2 to 3 shows on television somewhere. Mm-hmm. Maybe network. But
as lead or no, as a character?
As producer and oh, yeah. as creator uh-huh. and possibly as lead. I might do a lead in one of them. But
I'm almost accustomed to you showing up in a pre-existing movie. You know? Right. That's obviously a different role than being the leading man, but mm-hmm. you have such a strong presence that it makes certain scenes in a movie, right?
Sure.
So I'm just wondering if someone said, here, you can be leading man and you get $1 zillion.
Right.
But it's schlock.
No thanks.
Because it's a craft.
After the CSI experience, it was brought to my attention that there may be space for me in the television landscape as creator. We seem to be in a golden age of cable television right now. Beginning with Sex and the City and Sopranos in terms of
series. Then the list goes on.
And then it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. So really looking for some material to create and to take already existing material, book or something, and then expand it for television in that way. There's a possibility of an animated series that we're working on. Mm-hmm. I hope to do Thurgood again, so maybe you get a chance to see
it. I will so, and my folks are still the 85, and they're of the era, and my father was active in the civil rights movement, sure. So I will so try to do that.
The beauty of being an actor is, as you age, you play older people.
Somebody's got to play them.
There's always grandpas and uncles, and, you know, it's cool. I'm good. I'm a playwright. I've written a play. I'd like to do some of that.
So if you start writing, happens. Then you could write a sci-fi story. That
I could write a sci-fi story.
I mean, the sci-fi fan base is so loyal.
Huge.
It's large and loyal, and they're there for you forever.
It's true.
And you've been to Comic-Con.
I have not.
Whatever you heard, it's more than that.
More than that. Yeah, I heard it's wonderful. My wife just did a con in Philadelphia because mm-hmm. she's a bit of a sci-fi icon.
Okay.
On a show she did called Firefly.
Oh, yeah.
And
was she in the movie as well as the TV?
Yeah, yeah. She plays a character called Zoe. She's Captain Mal's second in command.
I got to go back now that I know this. Yeah.
She was also in a show called Cleopatra 2525. And she did many episodes of Xena, Warrior Princess, and many episodes of The Journey of Hercules.
So you're both in the biz.
So we're both sort of sci-fi people.
Cool. So this could be something waiting to be written.
Maybe.
You know.
Actually, my wife is Wonder Woman. My wife is Wonder Woman.
Does she have the forget thing to put around you?
She has the lasso. She has the magic lasso. She has the Amazonian physique, the great intelligence, and matchless beauty.
Now, there's one thing I'm jealous of that you have.
No.
Okay. I always wanted the key to a city. I always wanted to do something that where the city expressed its love as a key. Yeah. And I heard you had a key to Cambridge.
I have a key to Cambridge.
Because I went to college in Cambridge, right there.
Naturally. The mecca of American education. Naturally, Dr. Dyson, you would have gone to school in Boston.
What did you do to get the key to Cambridge?
Here's what I'm going to do for you, Neil. You got the keys to the Hayden? I got the key to Cambridge. Anytime you want to go to Cambridge with my key, use the key. You got it. We get the secret knot going. I can go up in the planetarium, get my stargaze on.
Just exchange the keys. All right. That's the deal.
It was a cultural rhythms festival that they have up there at Harvard every year. Dr. Alan Coulter that year.
That's Alan Counter.
Alan Counter, yeah, right. Yeah. Invited me up
he's
there
a friend.
To receive the Cultural Rhythms Award for Artist of the Year. So it was a lifetime of work. 30 years.
Okay, still got a ways to go then.
Yeah, it's 30 years of, you know, acting.
Yeah. I'll work harder.
Work harder. Struggle. Survival.
You've been listening to Star Talk Radio. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson. And as always, I bid you to keep looking up.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean
every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.